Sahanavavatu, Sahanaupunaktu, Sahavīryam karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Okay. On the bottom of page 51, the one that Sharada just chanted, let's go there. So again, repeat after me as I break the sandhi. Brahma eva aham.
Brahma eva aham.
Actually, it's Brahma eva aham asmi.
Brahma eva aham asmi.
Iti aparoksha jnanena.
Iti aparoksha jnanena.
Nikhila.
Nikhila.
Karma bandha.
Karma bandha.
Vinirmuktaha.
Syat.
So, the last class we were working on this aparoksha jnanam. So, just to reiterate one little thing about that. Yourself is already aparoksha for you. Means it's self-evident. It's not going to be known or experienced. It's just experienced even through pratyaksha as a direct knowledge, like your sense organs will, there's nothing intervening between you and the object of the knowledge. It's just direct, immediate knowledge, you and the, through the sense organs, these objects of knowledge are things that are going on in your mind. That's direct. There's nothing else that need take place other than the sense organ landing on the object. That's it. All of the other means of knowledge, including shabda, are indirect, except for the one little type of shabda. They're all indirect because there's another function that is necessary for that knowledge to take place. Like if I see smoke, I can infer fire. I don't see the fire. So it's not going to be direct. You don't see the fire at all, but you know the fire is there. That's indirect. And so we have these two basic types of knowledge in the world, right? We have direct knowledge and we have indirect knowledge. So the direct knowledge is called pratyaksha. It comes in the vicinity of your sense organs. Paroksha, it's away from the sense organs. And so that means you can't have that direct, immediate recognition without other operation coming into play. Yourself cannot be pratyaksha because it can't be objectified to be an object of your sense perception, nor can it be like an imagination or a memory or an emotion or something that's arising in the mind. Because that still has that subject-object relationship, even though it's direct. So it can't qualify as direct knowledge, pratyaksha, and it can't qualify also as indirect knowledge because you're present already. So how can you have indirect knowledge about yourself, which is already here? It also doesn't make any sense. And so there's two things to understand here. First is whether jnani or ajnani, whether you have knowledge or you don't have knowledge, yourself is self-evident. The self-experience is already here. It already is aparoksha, which means it doesn't require any means of knowledge for it to be known. It doesn't require a means of knowledge for it to be known because it's consciousness. It is its own experience. It doesn't require any kind of subject-object. No subject-object is necessary. It's self-shining. So I said there's two important words for this. One is Swatha Siddha. Swatha Siddha means literally self-evident. Self-evident means that it doesn't require a pramana or a means of knowledge to light it up. That's exactly what it means. No pramana required because it already is its own light. So it is Swatha Siddha, independent of any means of knowledge. It is known, not with a subject-object relationship, but because it's self-evident. Really get that? That's important. So there's that. And the other word that is important for us is swaprakasha. So we have this, for the nature of yourself, we have these two words, swatha siddha, doesn't require pramana because it's consciousness. And Swaprakasha means it is its own light. Swa, its own, Prakasha, light. Means it doesn't need another light, or doesn't, to put it in terms of light meaning consciousness, it doesn't need another consciousness to come in and illumine it because it is the luminary. So there is none of the subject-object relationship necessary, no pramana necessary, for you to know I am, I exist, I'm a conscious being. And of course you don't think about that, you just totally take it for granted because it's self-evident and nobody has to prove it to you. It is your own self-evident experience for all beings. Nobody is in debate about this, although some people... Not really. No normal person is in debate about this. But the abnorms are even in philosophy, you can get into arguments about what does it mean to exist? What does it mean to be conscious? Do we all have the same kind of like this? But here, just simply put, your being is self-evident. You don't have to look at it. You don't need a pramana to illumine it. You are basically, we can say, you are basically the bottom line. The bottom line is kind of a colloquialism for the adhishtana. The adhishtana is that which is the very substance, substratum, basis for maya. But if we say substratum or basis, it's not good enough because it's not like this. This is the basis, you know, or the platform on which I'm sitting on this platform. It's not like the creation is sitting on the platform of Brahman. It's that it's a different order of reality, like the snake on the rope, which totally depends upon Brahman, the Sat-Chit-Atma, for its being. That's what we mean by adhishtana. And so this is wonderful, and of course, it's very confusing to try to separate, even in your mind, the adhishtana from mithya, because there is no separation. There's no separation. Like if I use the clay pot as the perfect example, what separation is there between the clay and the pot? There's no separation. And now the pot has no problem, and clay has no problem, because from its perspective, there's only clay there. There isn't even a pot. There's only clay. Where's the pot from its perspective? It's just clay there. The problem is not from like the non-dual clay. Non-dual clay has no problem in reference to this illustration. But the pot has a problem because of its 50% correctness. The pot is only clay. So how can it think it's not clay? It can't think that because it is clay, you know. But that part is good, but then how does it come to understand? How does this mithya pot come to understand that it is truly clay, but that the clay is free from it? That's the confusing part. And the whole Vedanta rests on this, satyam mithya. Without that satyam mithya, there's duality. There's two. You know, there's this creation and there's Brahman. For this creation to not create two, it must be mithya. It must have a different order of reality that depends totally for its being and for its knownness, for its consciousness, on that which is self-evident Brahman. Right? Self-evident Sat. See, if I say, why did I say that? If we say that Brahman is Sat Chit Ananda, it's limitless conscious being. If we bring in the word conscious, it is existence, which is consciousness, then it is self-evident. It has to be self-evident. What are you going to do? Bring in another consciousness to illumine the consciousness. And so this self-evident Brahman, which from its own standpoint, from the standpoint of myself, I simply am. That's it. That's why, you know, when we do these meditations, and you just focus, you know, kind of just let your body relax and let it be as it is. Let your experiences be as they are. Don't worry about them. Just let them be. But notice when you're just being yourself from the standpoint of just yourself as an awareful being, and your buddhi is kind of turning inward to kind of recognize and differentiate myself even from it, you know, and you just sit there as yourself, the question is, you know, what color am I? What size am I? Do I know anything? Am I doing anything? Am I seeing anything? Is there anything but me from my own perspective? And there is nothing. There is nothing but me from my own perspective. You have to go into half duality and subject, object, and the other. You have to experience that from within the creation. But then when we say, yes, we experience this subject-object relationship and I can differentiate the self, myself from all of these things, I can do that just fine. But then when we analyze this other, we find that it is mitya by its very nature, because there's nothing in this creation that you can find upon analysis. Because everything in this creation comes into being and goes out of being. That means it's bordered by non-existence, which is not possible. Nothing can come from non-existence, so it can't have any independent reality if it comes into being and goes out of being. The only thing that has a reality is being itself. Because being doesn't come into being and go out of being. Changeless, non-objectifiable, etc. There's all these kind of logics that we have to understand in order to recognize that the experience from within the dream, from within the creation, is a bit different than the experience, the non-dual experience of me, the Adhishtana. And this difference, the non-dual me in which all of this is taking place, you know, is yourself, who is normally only recognized from the standpoint of the different conditioning adjuncts, and so always confused from beginningless time. But as this type of what we call viveka jnanam, this type of knowledge that requires this discrimination between that which is innermost and that which can be objectified, as this continues to kind of percolate inside with all of its logic, you start to, this buddhi starts to recognize that it is doing what it's doing, you know, and myself, the me, is not doing anything at any time. I simply am. So these two standpoints become differentiated. And that differentiation just isn't in your head. It's not just an intellectual differentiation. The fact is that my being, this me, is always quiet. I'm always present. I'm always full. I'm never changed. The me never goes away. It doesn't come and go. It doesn't change its nature. I always simply am. So with self-knowledge, this viveka has to become clear. And clear means not only recognized, but also free from doubt. This free from doubt part is why all of this logic comes in, all of these different examples come in, and then taking this logic and these examples back to the experience that you're having, so you can say, yeah, I'm really not doing anything, even as I'm blabbing away here. And you're all listening, okay? And some are daydreaming. But whatever's happening, I am just myself at all times. But this is what we have, has to become, this recognition has to become just a second nature to us, as for the Agnani says, I am this body. So now, the first understanding of aparoksha, the self is aparoksha, with or without knowledge. It does not require nor have any means of knowledge to light it up. It is its own experience. The whole universe goes away. This experience is already there, always there, self-evident me. That's aparoksha. Does not require any type of means of knowledge, is swetta siddha. When we say aparoksha jnanam is when I realize that this aparoksha atma, this self, this me that is ever present, is actually, in fact, self-evident, of a totally different order of reality than all of the objectifiable experiences, that this whole universe rests in me, enjoys one conscious being, which is my very self, that Ishvara comes from me, the Atma, is sustained by me, resolves into me. I am the Adhishtana, you know, the Adhishtana, that which Mithya depends on, of the whole creation, of all beings. There's only really one me, and that one me is self-evident. So now, it's the same Aparoksha Atma, but now I have knowledge of it. Until I have knowledge of it, I'm just taking myself that is ever-present, self-shining, to be whatever upadhi I happen to be identified with at the moment. But for the jnani, this self-evident Atma is me. The ahankara now, if it lands on an upadhi, a conditioning adjunct, it is mithya. It's a mithya ahankara. It's a mithya body, mind, sense organs. So the jnani will say, let's take a walk to the store. Oh, you don't walk? Okay, let me say it differently. Let the mithya two of us take a walk, which the mithya walk to the mithya store. So we just talk normally. But all the while, that knowledge is there of who you are. And it's there not in your head. It's in your head too. But it's there as a self-evident, recognized reality. You are here. Before, you took yourself to be all of these conditioning adjuncts. Now you don't. The conditioning adjuncts are still there, as we'll see. They're still there. They're still functioning. But the mithyatva of their nature is absolutely clear. And the changelessness of yours also is absolutely clear. That's without doubt. That's why when we say that without doubt, that's actually part of the whole teaching, is that as teaching takes place, your mind might think, well, yeah, what about this or what about that? Those are important. Those are the doubts to be brought up in satsang and privately and in whatever way. Those doubts have to come out and be aired out and seen really clearly. That's all part of the Shravana Manana Nididhyasana, is gaining that clarity. Some people are afraid to ask their questions, so I'm just going to be writing down, so those people who are afraid don't have to worry about it. Just write them down and put them in here. But the thing is, you might feel shy to ask your questions. I don't know if you do or not, but I'm used to people feeling shy. Everybody has these questions, you know. So your question isn't just your question. You're bringing up a point that is going to be kind of unpacked, and it blesses everybody. So it's not like we're so different that our questions are that different, really. You know, I remember going to satsang with Swamiji for many, many years, and it's the same questions over and over and over and over. Again, because those are the questions. You know, where there's a lack of clarity here, lack of clarity there, and everybody loves to hear his answer. I've heard his answer the same question hundreds of times. And I never feel tired of hearing how he answers the question. Because when he answers the question, he's unfolding it, so you actually are gaining the vision as he answers that question. You know, he's just unpacking it for you. And as he unpacks it, he's seeing it and you're seeing it. It's a very pleasant experience. So questions have to be really important. So now here in this section, that this little sentence that we're doing here, again, he is talking about the Jivan Mukta, right? So here, this first part is giving the definition of the Jivan Mukta. And so it says, Brahma eva ahamasmi. Brahma eva, I am Brahman. I am Brahman alone. Or eva means I am only Brahman, I am indeed Brahman, you know, I am definitely Brahman, I am Brahman alone, whatever, however you want to say it, it's emphasis. Brahma eva aham asmi anga. Iti aparoksha jnanena. By this aparoksha jnanam, this direct, immediate recognition that I am Brahman. So when you say aparoksha jnanam, it means that you have recognized yourself, who is here, the me that is here, as Brahman. Not as an intellectual concept, like when we... Sometimes it's hard to teach Vedanta in the... like at CIS. I always teach it as a pramana. But in the academics, students are used to studying a philosophy, and they'll study it more or less intellectually, you know. And so then they're used to learning it intellectually rather than having it talk to them as a pramana. They didn't really know about that unless they're a mamuchu, and then their mind will just take it up. But here, this, of course, you have to use your mind. You have to use your buddhi in order to understand. But the knowledge is not meant to be intellectual. It's meant to be a pramana to help you actually recognize yourself, the self that is here. That's not intellectual. That there's a lot of logic that supports it and that your buddhi is necessary, that's absolutely true. But the pramana itself, this means of knowledge, is being wielded in such a way that you can have that viveka, that differentiation between me, your own self, and what you've taken to be me because of ajnanam. So the recognition isn't, oh, there's the Atma is Brahman. The Upanishads say that the Atma is Brahman, and Brahman is defined as Satchidananda. You know? And the whole world is defined as mithya, that which has no individual reality and only an apparent reality. And that is primarily the vision of the Vedanta. Okay, so what? It means nothing. It's just a philosophy. That's not what the Upanishads are. They're not just a philosophy. They're like your eyes. It's not, you know, when we chant the Guru Stotram, there's many verses in there. They're all in praise of the Guru. But in one line it says, the Guru who is more dear to me than my eyes. That is because of Aparoksha Jnanam. It is making me see that which is not something to be seen out here, but making me see directly my own nature. That's what it is. So this word, this aparoksha jnanam, is a very important word in the whole sampradaya, because this is the type of knowledge that is being delivered. It's not something to be seen as an object. It's not an indirect knowledge of some Atma over there that we're telling you about. It is the recognition of your own being, the me, that has always been here. And for the jnani, what is the knowledge? That I, this me, this self, I am Brahman. I am the Satchidatma. That's who I am. I recognize it. I see it. That's aparoksha jnanam. So now, for one who has this aparoksha jnanam in the form of I am Brahman, right, in the form I am Brahman, where those words are actually landing on myself, for that person, now the next thing, nikila karma bandha vinyanamuktaha syat. For that person, nikila karma means all the karmas. We have to find out, it'll be the next question, what are all those karmas? Just now, all karmas. Nikila karmas, all of the karmas. It's really here, karma means the karma pala, all of the results of karma. We'll see. Bandha, the bondage brought about by all different types of karmas. Nikila karma bandha vinirmuktaha, the one who is completely free from the bondage brought about by really punyan papa, by all of the karmas that we accrue. So who is completely free of all of those karmas? The one who has a paroksha jnanam of myself as aham brahmasmi. If you just think, we don't get into this, but just to, how can Brahman, how can yourself, as conscious, your conscious being, that is not an object within time and space, you know, how can you have karma? There's no duality in yourself. There's no second self. There's no space there. There's no action there. It's you're non-dual. Where is there karma for you? You've never had karma. You never will have karma. You don't have any arms and legs to be doing things. You don't have a mind that's thinking good thoughts or bad thoughts. Yourself does nothing other than be the Satchidatma. So where's karma for you? The karma is going to belong to these upadis within duality, where we have some free will and we have the kartritva, the doership, and the bhoktritva, you know, the enjoyership. And we have Dharma and Adharma, and we have the whole first part of the Vedas that are telling us, you know, these are the dharmic, this is the dharmic way to be. These things will get you into trouble. Stay on this side of Dharma and Bhagwan will bless you. And this side of Dharma, Adharma, is punishing. Adharma is punishing. And we have experienced that. That's what trains us, the universe trains us to move away from Adharma and go toward Dharma. Because Dharma, as long as our actions and our behavior takes place within Dharma, we feel relatively whole and complete. We have relative shanti. We have a sense of unity with the universe, of being one with the universe, even without any knowledge. There's a sense of well-being, just experientially. And you learn that. You learn just, it's like if I put my hand in fire, you do it a few times and you realize, no, I better not do that anymore because it will burn. It will burn. That's just how it is. Whether you know it's fire or not, it will still burn. Right? So we learn Dharma and Adharma. You know, how to stay within Dharma so that the karma pala, the results of my actions on it, on an immediate level and on an adrishta level, a level to become later, bless me. You know, not that Bhagavan's mad, we're doing an adharma, it's going to punish you. It's adharma is punishing by its nature. Dharma is rewarding by its nature. It's not anybody there looking over your shoulder waiting for you to do an adharma. Adharma, you know, has its own reward, which is negative. And Dharma has its own reward, which is positive. We call it punya papa. Punya is positive. It's like a reward. You know, it gives you ananda. Punya is meant to create situations for you that give you ananda. Papa is meant to create situations that give you pain, that give you unhappiness. They don't have to, but the situation is there, and it's not really meant to make you happy at all. But these situations, the happy situations, they are there, and they're meant to be pleasing to you, but they may not be. But they're meant for that. That's what we mean by karma pala, adrishta. So we have to get into all of this now. So, just to see this part, he says, nikila karma bandha vina muktaha syat vat jnani, the one who has this aparoksha jnanam of the self, that person is freed from all karma. So what does that mean? First of all, what is the karma? Let's go to the next page. Karma, so repeat. Oh, why don't you, yeah, the page. Why don't you do the whole page?
The whole page?
Two pages.
Karmani kati.
Karmani kati.
Dhani.
Vidhani.
Santiti.
Santiti.
Chet agami.
Chet agami.
Chet agami.
Chet agami.
Sanchitta prarabdha.
Sanchitta prarabdha.
Bhedena.
Bhedena.
Vidhani santi.
Vidhani santi.
Agami karma kim.
Agami karma kim.
Agami karma kim.
Agami karma kim.
Jnanotpatyanantaram.
Jnanotpatyanantaram.
Jnani deha kritam.
Jnani deha kritam.
Punya papa rupam.
Punya papa rupam.
Karma
yadasti.
Tadagami.
Tadagami.
Nitya vidhiyate.
Nitya vidhiyate.
Sanchitta, sanchitta karma kim.
Sanchitta karma kim.
Ananta koti.
Ananta koti.
Janmanam.
Janmanam.
Bijabhutam.
Bijabhutam.
Sat.
Sat.
Yat.
Karma jatam.
Oh, satyatam. Okay, sorry, I got lost. Okay,
yat karma jatam.
Yat karma jatam.
Purvarjitam.
Purvarjitam.
Tishtati.
Tat
sanchittam.
Tat sanchittam.
Nyeyam.
Nyeyam.
That's good for me. So the question comes after saying freed, you know, the one who has a parochignanam in the form of aham brahmasmi, that one is freed from nikila karmas, all karmas. So then the next question is, karmani kati vidhani santi iti. Kati vidhani, how many kinds, how many types, how many kinds of karma, right? How many types of karma are there? There are, how literally... There, the karmas are how many types? How many types of karma do we have here? You know? And so he says, chait, if you should ask this, then agami is one, sanchita two, prarabdha three, bedena, trividhani santi. The karmas, they are trividhani santi. They are divided into three types. Trividha. There are three different types of karma. One is agami karma. One is sanchita karma. One is prarabdha karma. These are the three types of karma. So then, what does each one of those mean? Right? So go to the next one. Agami karma kim.
Agami karma kim.
What is the agami karma? That's the first one. What do we mean by agami karma? Let's just read this and then I'll go on this for a while. Jnanotpatti anantaram.
Jnanotpatti anantaram.
So if I break this, Sandy. Jnana utpatti anantaram.
Jnana utpatti anantaram.
Then jnani deha kritam.
Jnani deha kritam.
Punya papa rupam.
Punya papa rupam.
Karma yad asti.
Karma yad asti.
Tad agami.
Tad agami.
Iti abhidhiyate.
Iti abhidhiyate.
Okay. So first of all, these three types of karmas, they apply to all humans. And when they're talking about, so whether you're jnani or ajnani is the idea. Jnani, if you're ajnani or ajnani, all have these three types of karma. Okay? But we're really talking now, what happens to the jivan mukta? The jivan mukta also has these three types of karma. But here, the jivan mukta is the one who has recognized through direct aparoksha jnanam that I have no karma. So for me, there is no karma. And yet, these three types of karmas have been and are being accrued and experienced. So for the jnani who has realized, I am free as Brahman myself, I'm completely free of karma, what happens to all of these karmas that are floating around? Because the karmas have been created. Now, there's two different ways that we use karma, or there's other ways also in this context. The karma means I do a karma, I do a particular action, you know, or I do a Vaidika karma. Vaidika karma means there's different rituals, you know, and different things I do, like danam, giving, charities, and whatnot that are really listed in the Vedas. Especially karma can just mean rituals. So there's those karmas, the doing of the rituals, or we talk about karma as karma pala, the result of what we have done, right? And so here, when we're talking about these karmas, we're really talking about the karma palas. Because for the jnani, so as we'll see, for the jnani, a lot of karmas have already been accrued, as for all of us, many karmas have been accrued. There are karmas that are being used to take us through this whole life. There are karmas that we're accruing in this life, the actions that we do. Okay, so the question here is, in this context, we're talking about the Jivan Mukta, the one who is living liberated. What happens to all of those karmas when the body drops? So that's the main context that we're in here. Okay. Okay. So, agami karmakim jnana utpatti anantaram. That this little compound means anantaram, after the rise, utpatti, of jnanam, of knowledge, self-knowledge. So after the rise of self-knowledge, jnani deha kritam, that which has been done, krita, by the jnani's body, while the jnani is embodied, right? So this, the body of the jnani, okay, the body of the jnani's body is doing all these karmas and collecting this karma pala, because every karma that you do will collect some sort of karma pala. We'll see, we'll dissect that a little bit later. So he says, jnani deha kritam, that which has been done by the jnani's body, while the jnani is embodied, you can think of it like that too. Punya papa rupam karma. Karma, which is in the form of punya and papa. That's what I mean by karma pala. Punya and papa is the result of your karma. So there's a few more things to say, but just for now. So it says, yet asti, that which asti is the karma in the form of punya and papa, which have been done by the embodied jnani, the jnani who's still in this body, after that knowledge has occurred, right? Because now I've gained knowledge, then what's going to happen? He says that karma is called agami. Iti abhidhiyate is called. That kind of karma is called the agami karma. So here, there's a better order than what he's putting this in. Let me just talk about karma for a minute. Any karma action that we do is going to reap a result. The result is twofold. One is drishta karma. Those karmas which are seen, right? Those karmas which are seen here. In other words, you do the karma and you get the result. Those are called the karmas which are seen, which are experienced here itself on this loka, in this world. So those are drishta karmas. Then there are what we call adrishta karmas. Those are results of your karma which are not seen. That means they are not the karma pala, the result of the karma. So karma pala means the result of the action. That karma pala does not fructify here. It fructifies later, usually in another life. It's possible for it to fructify in later on in this life. But for the most part, we look at adrishta karmas as karma palas, which will fructify later in another birth, in the form of punya papa. So the adrishta, the unseen karmas, are punya and papa. The seen karmas are just the immediate results of your action. So a kind of a gruesome example that has been used is, say, if somebody commits a murder with a knife, stab somebody, they're doing a robbery, they stab somebody, they kill someone. That is a papa. That is going to be, in terms of what actually happens in the world, because there's laws against that, etc. First thing that's happened is that the person has died. That person has died. That's the drishta karma. Other drishta karmas is that person, if he's caught, is going to be put in jail. That's drishta karma. Other drishta karmas are whatever goes on is in his or her mind after that adharmic event, right? Because this is all happening here and now. Whereas, what if somebody, a doctor, is operating with a knife on his patient, trying to save the life of the patient, and the patient dies? Is that a papa karma? What happens is the same. The person dies. In that level, the person dies. But the adrishta karma, there's not going to be any negative person. The doctor will feel so badly that he lost the patient. But his sole intent was to save the patient. So there's no adrishta, there's no papa karma there. There could even be punya karma, because he did everything possible to save the patient. The patient didn't live, you know. And so it is not the punya and papa, that it is not really about the act. It's about the intention. So punya papa is subtle. It has to do with the intent. And so if the intent is a dharma, is himsa, is to hurt, is to injure, you know, is to cause suffering, that's going to have that'll do what it's meant to do. It'll hurt, it will injure, it will cause suffering. Drishta karma, you know. And it'll cause emotional upheaval also, because you can't escape experiencing what you do, you know, even internally. If you're hating somebody and you kill them, you get to experience not only the act of killing, but the hatred that you feel. So you don't escape, but it's happening here and now. Okay? The adrishta is going to have to do not so much with the act as with the intention, you know, with the intention. It's like I told the story of Swamiji, who wouldn't pick a flower, let alone kill anything. He'd pick up ants off of his shower in the shower and transport them outside before he took a shower. You know, he would catch mosquitoes and take them out and let them go free. You know, but one time in Rishikesh, sitting in his, you know, in front of his kutir, there was a student walking by. Actually, she was a Western girl walking by, and there was a cobra that she had seen. I don't know if she didn't see it. I don't think anybody had seen it because nobody had responded to it. It was coming right toward her. And Swamiji, it happened so fast that you couldn't, it was almost like lightning. He flew up, and as he was flying up, he grabbed the stick that was lying against a post and went down, and he killed that cobra. He got it right on the head and killed it. Right as it was coming toward this girl, would have killed her, you know. Killed it, and he sent back down, and we had satsang. Yeah, it was really something. But, you know, he would never, ever hurt anyone or take a life. But, you know, if it's the cobra or the girl, he saved the girl. And so, for him, there is no, because he's a jnani, first of all, there's no karma anyway, as we'll see. But there's certainly no papa there, because the intent was only to save. And if I were to ask him this, he would probably say something like, even if there was a papa, I would do it to save the girl, you know, from the bite of the cobra. So that's just some examples. So the point here is that when we have the drishta karmas, those are the seen, experienced events right here and now. And the pala of this, the karma pala, the result of that particular story is that the girl was not bitten by the cobra, and the cobra was killed. That's the drishta. That's what was seen, that was what was experienced. The karmapala is on a different level, you know, and that has solely to do with the motivation or the morality or the dharma of the act. And that, it has its own laws, it has its own subtle laws, and that will produce a result that we call punya, if it's a positive result meant to give shanti or happiness, or a papa, that's a negative result that is really karmapala, that is subtle, that is meant to fructify in situations that are not meant to cause happiness. So these punya and papa, here the jnani has self-knowledge, you know. There isn't going to really be anyone to experience those karmas, because the karta, the doer, is not there anymore. The very doer, the doership is a result of ajnanam. You know, you have to take yourself to be the body, mind, sense organs complex within a hankara that identifies with the mind and body as the one who is doing this action to reap the result. But what about the jnani who has that aparoksha jnanam that I am Brahman? From my standpoint, the standpoint of a jnani who knows the self, then where has there ever been karma for me? Before, now, or later? I am not a karta. I am not a doer. I am not a bhokta. I am just the satchitatma. I don't have hands or legs or anything. I don't have thoughts. I just simply am whole and complete in myself. And this universe is an expression of that self. So there is no karma for me. So here, but anyway, that's where we're going. So here it says, just giving you the definition, first of all. So, jnana utpati anantaram, jnani deha kritam, punya papa rupam, karma yadasti. Karma, which is in the form of punya papa, these adrishta karmas, which were done by the jnani, by the embodied jnani, after the gain of knowledge. Okay, so that's the jnani. That is called agami karmas. So just to say it in maybe a little different way, the agami karmas, now that you're here, you have a body, now you're accruing new karmas by the actions that you do. Right? For a jnani, all of this time before having knowledge, the jnani was also accruing karma, right? Any karma that you do, there's a karma pala, which is punya and papa. Even after knowledge, the jnani can be accruing karma by the actions, because it's this plane of reality is still functioning, right? The body is here, the mind is here, the sense organs here, the actions are there, the karma pala is there. But from the standpoint of the jnani, the self, the atma, who I am, I'm not a karta at all. So I'm not accruing any karma. So what are we going to do about that? That's the first problem. Okay. Where's that karma going to go? Where's it going to go? Because the karma is there. And the jnani is that not there to receive it. Okay, so just for now. Let's do the next one. Sanchittam karma. Or sanchittam?
Sanchittam.
Karma kim.
Karma kim.
What is the sanchitta karma? Okay. Ananta koti janmanam. See that? Ananta koti janmanam. Bija bhutam.
Bija-bhutam
sad-yat
karma-jatam karma-jatam
purva-arjitam
purva-arjitam
tishtati
tat-sanchitam
nyayam.
Nyayam.
Just in English first, the sanchitta, so we did the agami karmas, those are the karmas that you accrue while you're embodied here. The sanchitta karmas are all the karmas, it's like this file, the sanchitta file, of all of the karma pullas that have been accrued lifetime after lifetime after lifetime from beginningless time that have not yet fructified. And so that's called the sanchitta. We'll often say this, your sanchitta file. So your sanchitta file is very full of countless karmas that are yet to be experienced. Countless karma polas in the form of punya and papa that are yet to fructify. That's the sanchitta. So here it says, ananta koti janmanam. So for countless, ananta means without end. Countless crores. One crore is 10 million. So countless crores of births. Okay. Bijabhutam sad yet karmajatam purvarchitam tishtati. So we say here, karmajatam, here that jata in this sense means the whole collection of karmas, not that which is formed. The whole jata is a whole group, like jati. The whole group of karmas, which are sad, which are existing bijabhutam in a seed form, waiting to sprout. They have to just be dropped in the right place. We'll see where they're dropped in a minute. So these karmas, this collection of karmas, which have been accrued over countless births and are there waiting in a seed form, purvarjitam, having been collected before, those that are remaining there, having been gathered previously, in previous births, that's the important, crores and crores of karma, so they've been gathered there in previous births, waiting in a seed form, those should be known as sanchitta, the sanchitta karma, sanchitta nyan, those would be known as the sanchitta karmas. So this is also an interesting kind of little dilemma. Because if you have countless karmas in your account, just waiting for an opportunity, millions of them, waiting for an opportunity to fructify, you know, to come to take birth, we'd say. You have to go to the power of the karma, really, to see that. But they're waiting to fructify. That means, how can you possibly exhaust all of those karmas? If you're a jiva and identified with this, and that kartritvam, bhoktritvam, that doership, enjoyership is all there for you, you know, then you have this whole slew of karmas that you actually can't get rid of. And then people get confused about this if they don't understand properly. How can you say there's any such thing as moksha? How can I get off this wheel of samsara? You know, when I have countless, literally countless, you could almost say infinite, because infinite lives, karmas that are waiting to be fructified. So that means I'm going to be taking birth after birth after birth after birth. There's nothing I can do about that. I can't possibly exhaust all those sanchitta karmas. You know? How can you exhaust those sanchitta karmas? You can't really, as the karta, as the doer, but you can exhaust them completely. You can be released from them completely when you are not the doer. The one who is not the doer or the enjoyer has no karma. And so the jnani, the one who is not a doer but is just the satchitatma, that jnani has no karmas at all. And so what to do with these sanchitta karmas? Right? Who's going to own those? Because the jnani is not a karta to own them, and here they are all sitting there in the sanchitta file. So how are those going to be exhausted? And that's a problem. Okay. We'll do this tomorrow. The prarabdha. We are really close to the end. Yeah, we have two classes left, I think. Unless I elaborate on something. Which could happen, but that would only make it three classes.
Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.